The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
To the house! Touchdown!
This is unbelievable.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Barton Simmons. I'm Chip Patterson. It's the mid-season package, mid-season week. I mean, if you are here at CBS Sports, you are listening to the CBS Sports Digital Podcast, and you know that as one of the preeminent destinations for college football coverage, I mean, we've got the midseason covered from everything you need. At CBSSports.com, you'll be able to see the All-America team. You'll be able to see our second chance at making some expert picks. And here on the Cover 3 Podcast, we're going to take it even deeper and sort of take stock of where we're at and where we think things are going. So, Barton, I kind of like this exercise because I think that it refocuses me for the home stretch, the second half of October, November, in terms of really forcing me to get out of whatever bubble I'm in and survey the landscape. So I kind of like this week.
Yeah, pull it back a little bit, pull back the lens, and get out of the minutia a little bit and sort of re-rack things.
So where do you want to start? Do you want to get started with our second chance expert picks?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. So, on CBSSports.com, you can see everyone's second chance expert picks. Dennis Dye, Jerry Palm, Tom Fornelli, Barrett Salee, Ben Kercheval, and ours. And so, when you had to break down first picking a new college football playoff, you know, beginning of the season, we have to pick our four. And I think that, you know, that was where I rolled out my beloved USC Trojans. I've pulled them back off the table. They are not in my second chance expert picks. But as you were trying to debate a college football playoff field that, as we've discussed here on the podcast and on CBS Sports HQ, is deeper than ever, you know, like, where did you end up landing when you were trying to make those decisions?
Well, I'll introduce this by just listing my four. I went Ohio State 1, Alabama 2, LSU 3, Clemson 4. And as weird as that sounds to have two teams from the same division in the playoffs, I think that's starting to look more and more plausible and realistic. I think Ohio State looks like the best team. I think Ohio State I don't feel like overly confident that Ohio State is the best team. I feel pretty confident Ohio State has, in fact, looked like the best team. But I also acknowledge that, you know, once we get into the playoffs, I mean, that's going to be a bunch of really good teams battling out. Who knows who wins it? But I think Ohio State at one. I still believe Ohio State survives the Big Ten
unscathed, no losses.
Oh gosh, I don't know.
Truthfully, I didn't think all that much about my 1-4. I will admit it right now. I was thinking way more about who the four are than specifically landing on the seeding for them. So,
all right, so how did you go about it then? What do you mean who the four are? Who the four are that you just think will land there and just not really get into the details of how they got there?
Who the four are in terms of like who ends up making the cut, because the college football playoff selection committee, they do rank them 1 through 25, but ultimately their only task is to pick the four best teams. And so I think that that's a little bit of a little bit more about like handing out your rose bachelor style than it is making sure that two is in fact ahead of three. You know, we are splitting very, you know, we're splitting hairs when it comes to the best teams in the country. My four is LSU, Oklahoma, Clemson, and Ohio State.
So Alabama's out. Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
All right. So basically what you're saying is you think, you think LSU, as we stand here today, and I will grant you permission to change this if you know, you learn more information that, and you want to, but as we sit here today, you think that LSU will beat Alabama and that the SEC will get one in.
Yes, I think LSU will beat Alabama, and I think that Alabama against, you know, whoever that ends up being that number four seed, like it, we talked about, it's all about Alabama and Clemson. What if it comes down to a one-loss Alabama arguing its case against an undefeated Clemson? Talk about Alabama players talking about thinking about Clemson all during SEC media day, and Clemson living rent free in the minds of the SEC. If it comes down to an undefeated conference champion Clemson and a one loss Alabama, I think Clemson gets in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess there's going to be some people that will make the case that the a one loss SEC team like Alabama should get in. Do you think that's even a real, like, is that even conceivable that the committee would do that, though? Leave Clemson out undefeated?
No. And it is a combination of both a little bit like not conspiracy theorist, but it just, it doesn't pass the smell test, right? You're the defending champs who go undefeated, which means that they would have won 28 games in a row, just isn't going to get left out.
Yeah. I'm at, like, if obviously the undefeated teams from the top tier, I think, will end up getting in. But where I'm at right now and why I have Alabama and LSU in is because I think as good as those two teams are playing right now, and as good as they look, as good as sort of the eye test, the sex appeal, all that, that's there. If that game is close, if that game is really competitive, if that game is what we think it'll be, then as long as there's not four other undefeated teams, I feel pretty confident that Alabama and LSU would get in over, say, like the loser of that game, if they win all the others, I feel pretty confident would get in over, say, a one-loss Big 12 champ, a one-loss ACC champ, a one-loss Big Ten champ. I think the perception of the loser of that game, if it wins everything else, will be high enough to beat out any other one-loss team that wins a conference.
Okay, and that comes back to a team that is in mine and not in yours, and the one that my preseason pick, and I just decided to ride it out when I was given a second chance to re-rack it, Oklahoma. So that means that, with everything that you've seen from Oklahoma so far this year, I would assume that your prediction is that there is a loss in the Sooners' future.
That is my prediction. Yes. I think they lose somewhere. I mean, they've got, I mean,
by the way, and like just to throw this out there, we don't have three undefeated teams at the end of college football seasons. Normally, right, like it might be two. Sometimes it's just one. So you're not out of line to suggest that a college football team might lose a game.
I think that Oklahoma, the last five games of the year, at Kansas State, Iowa State, at Baylor, TCU, at Oklahoma State, I think those are five losable games. I'm not saying that I think they are capable of losing any one of those games. And if you're throwing me a five-game stretch of losable games when, you know, taking into account what you just said, I just think that's I'm going with the numbers there. I'm going with the odds. Conversely, like for instance, Alabama, they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 regular season games left. They have, in my opinion, 2 of those are losable.
Auburn.
And I would say, yeah, Auburn and LSU.
Yeah.
And to be clear, and while I think Alabama is better than Oklahoma, I lean that way. If you gave Oklahoma Alabama's remaining schedule, I would say that they only have 2 losable games too. Like Oklahoma ain't losing to Mississippi State or Arkansas or Tennessee. So I just think it's the nature of Oklahoma having a tougher schedule, and just, you know, I just think they'll slip up somewhere, if not in the Big 12 championship game.
Okay, and before we move on from our re-racked projected playoff, I want to sort of throw this out there. I mentioned it on CBS Sports HQ last night. As I was pulling back the lens and as I was sort of surveying the landscape and doing all my hard research to make sure I had everything right, man, I want to, and this could all be washed away very, very quickly, but I want to at least entertain the conversation that the SEC is not the only conference capable of getting 2 teams in. And where you were mentioning that, you know, 2 teams from the same division, that is, that might be something that some people can't quite figure out. If Ohio State and Penn State is an instant classic and that game goes all the way down to the wire and Penn State continues to improve and dismantles Michigan this weekend and at the end of the year is an 11-1 team, but just its only loss is in Columbus to the Buckeyes. You know, so I guess we could say the same thing about Wisconsin. If they continue to be as dominant as they've been, I think the Big Ten, if the SEC right now has 3 teams that are sort of in the playoff talk, and maybe it's only 2, or where it's Alabama, LSU, maybe Georgia, and I guess you could say maybe Florida, though we know the loser of that is probably out. I think the Big Ten has 3 teams that have a good-looking shot at the playoff, and that's where a Clemson, who if you lose, you're going to be right there on the chopping block. An Oklahoma, if you lose, you're right there on the chopping block. I really believe that the Big Ten, at this point in the season, looks as likely as the SEC to maybe get more than 1 team in the playoff.
That's fair. I think the Big Ten is the only conference that has right now 3 teams that look playoff worthy. I guess you could make the argument that...
Are you throwing Georgia out? You just said like,
right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, I guess Georgia could work itself back in but I mean...
A home loss as a 24-point favorite to South Carolina?
Right.
No shows like that have gotten Ohio State thrown out of the playoff.
Yeah. So, but I think to your point, so like as you play that out, I think, for example, barring like a chaos elsewhere, if everyone just sort of has generally the finish we expect, I think that Penn State would have to beat Ohio State, and then Ohio State is the second team in. Then if Penn State loses to Ohio State, I think that they would have a little bit of a hard time jumping some of the other teams that sort of the national collective likes. And then, you know, same thing. Like, I think Wisconsin would have to win that Big Ten championship game, and then, you know, because Ohio State beat them earlier in the season, or because Ohio State was like, I think that the Wisconsin or Penn State would have to be the one that sort of makes that regular season or that statement win. And then Ohio State sort of collective body of work prior is what jumps that second team into the playoffs.
We
Does
don't.
Make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Because there's a certain, especially with I love the Penn State point, because Penn State's profile so far doesn't have a whole bunch of big margins. It doesn't have a bunch of big point margins. It doesn't have a bunch of big yardage margins. And Ohio State's just obliterating everyone. And so that's where, if Penn State is the champion then and has that regular season win against Ohio State, you're like, well, you got to put them in. And then Ohio State looks like a dominant one-loss team. Penn State might not have such a dominant profile, certainly not compared to the Buckeyes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, did you get any? Were there any gripes from the midseason All-America team?
Oh no! I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, I obviously had some players different, but a lot of it was generally like what I had on mine. I thought I was in agreement with Jamar. I'm glad everyone else agreed with me on Jamar Chase being in there at receiver, because there heading into this season, there were some big names that I thought would maybe catch the eye of others. But Jamar Chase has been, I think, the most consistent big time receiver in the country so far this year. So I liked having him on there. I was glad Penei Sewell was on there. I thought he was a must have. I was.
Have you guys heard about Penei Sewell? I think I'm going out of my way to mention his name just to continue to push it out into the ether, because it's what everyone wants to. Which is fair if we're talking about Oregon, right? Like if we're talking about Oregon, we should talk about the offensive line. If we're talking about the offensive line, you should talk about Penei Sewell. But everyone's got a Penei Sewell fascination right now.
Yeah, and I'm here for it. I'm with it. Oh, you know who didn't make? I say the only guy that didn't make it that I think probably should have, and it's tough because all the linebackers that made it are worthy. But Isaiah Simmons, I think, got the shaft a little bit here. Isaiah Simmons, and I'll talk about him in our superlatives a little bit. But I thought he deserved to be on there.
Go gadget arms and legs.
Yeah.
Yeah, just all over the place.
And that's the Clemson linebacker. Sometimes we get comments that we don't identify guys well enough. We just throw names out. So yes, Clemson linebacker Isaiah Simmons.
Good. That's self-scouting. Well, I guess it's not self-scouting. It's taking some taking evaluation and being able to push it forward. We're improving.
It's being coachable.
Coachable. Yes. I thought that when you were breaking down the defensive line and the linebackers, as you mentioned, it felt like you were overwhelmed with options. As usual, the offensive line, you're not going to find as much of a unified position. And with Jamar Chase, I love his case, because you pushed Jamar Chase early, like knowing him from recruiting and as a prospect. And I was like a little bit too excited about him last year from hearing about him from you. And I think he made a couple of big plays. I mentioned his name way more than he was actually turning up production for it. And right. Now I feel like I'm cashing in on it. So
Yeah. So yes, that's paying out right now.
Yeah.
So I'm good. I'm glad. I'm glad that I didn't let us down on the hype train.
Yeah, for sure. I was out here, and I think that at one point last season, even you were. I was like, and I mean Jamar Chase, right? And you're like, yeah, I mean he's playing okay, but I don't know. Slow down. Oh man. All right. Well, let's dig into the superlatives. Where do you want to start, with players or coaches or teams?
No, let's start with I think a good place to start is you know, kind of taking a positive spin, you know, an optimistic approach. Most pleasant surprise team, maybe. Is that a good place to start?
Yeah, love it.
All right. So I'm going to save, because I got a coach of the year comment, I'm going to save one team. But I would say under the pleasant surprise categories, probably – and this is because generally pleasant surprise is like the team you thought was going to go, you know, miss a bowl and ends up 8-4 or something. But I'm going to go a little different route. You know, the team that's supposed to be 8-4 and looks like they might be 11-1. I'm going Wisconsin.
Yep.
You know, that's been a pleasant surprise in just seeing that program. Like, because last year I was at the Big Ten Media Day, and the whole narrative was, let's talk to Paul Chryst and see what it's like being a team that actually has national title expectations thrust on you. How's it going, coach? Like, are you guys dealing with this new narrative? And, you know, they tried to shrug it off, and it was the same approach that they typically have every year. But ultimately, whether the preseason expectations got to them or not, it was a very different looking team. And now all of a sudden they sneak in under the radar once again, and shame on us for letting them do that. But they look, this is the best Wisconsin team yet, it looks like.
And there were some injury because to me, it was a lot of the defense falling apart, and they literally were falling apart a little bit because the injuries were stacking up, and you know, the performance also suffered a little bit. And when Wisconsin lost itself defensively, that's when a big part of the whole team identity starts to fall apart, because you run the ball really well and you play great defense. Well, if the defense starts to get leaky, then the offense now has to become a little bit more aggressive. And it, you know, Alex Hornibrook wasn't going to be that player, and that offense was missing some skill position players for both injury and off-field reasons. So the whole sort of the team that we thought was going to be wasn't the team that was, but you're 100% right, because that team started in the top 10 and it went 7-5 in the regular season.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And they've, and look, to be clear, I don't know what their injury count has been, but I mean, there's a couple guys that come to mind that have gotten banged up. I mean, Scott Nelson, their starting safety, who's a really good player. I mean, he was hurt pretty early in the year. I feel like they've had other secondary guys that have been a little banged up, and they've responded to that, and I don't even think that coming into the season this year, I don't even know that their defense had as many recognizable names as it did coming into the season last year. But I think more guys have just stepped up, and they've been sort of ready for the next man up approach this year more so than last year. So it's been a classic Wisconsin uptick, and it's been fun to watch. I think all of a sudden we got a team like legitimately they look. Right now, they're blowing teams out at the same rate Ohio State is. They just outdid Ohio State and beating up on Michigan State. That's something.
It sort of takes away from the nature of superlative that I've got a couple listed here, but it makes for good conversation. So I also had Wisconsin written down. I've also got a pair of Barton Simmons specials. I've got Baylor and Missouri. And I've got SMU. Those are the ones that came to mind. And so I guess I want to start with SMU because that's the one I've been a little bit late to. That's one of those teams where they were an undefeated start that includes wins over TCU and a wild, you know, like 20 plus point comeback and overtime win. They've been generating buzz. It is on me. Like, this is just something where it's not been an oversight. I've been ranking them in the CBS Sports 130, but I just haven't really dug into what's happening there. And I see Sonny Dykes. I see Rhett Lashley, offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. And I see Shane Buechele. And I'm like, dude, SMU is second chance U. Like, this is a whole bunch of just college football, like, it didn't work out at this one stop, but we're all pulling together and we're all starting to get on the same page and putting ourselves in a position where we're going to be able to go and challenge for a conference championship. And given some of the frustrations and some of the shortcomings that, you know, they have had at different stops, I think that this is a really, really cool story for the Mustangs moving forward. You're in the thick of an AAC race that I also think is, and I think I might have mentioned this before, but that I think it's going to be a really, really fun race to track down the rest of the season.
Yeah. You know, it's the Sonny Dykes deal is very, because you mentioned it almost as like second chance, you said second chance you kind of deal, and almost as if, you know, these are guys that sort of missed on their first job or their first go round, and now they got another opportunity. But like the Sonny Dykes track is really interesting because so he was head coach at Louisiana Tech.
Right.
Had a ton of success there relative to Louisiana Tech. You know, went 9-3 his last year there. And then he gets, so, you know, sort of the next step is, all right, you get a head coaching job. I guess he was following up Tedford at Cal, right?
Yep.
So he follows Tedford at Cal.
0-for first season or just 0-for in conference play?
He was 1-for-11. In the first season.
Yeah.
But then gets it going and was 5-7, 8-5, like produced Jared Goff. Defense wasn't great, but they still, even in 2016, like they could score points. And he didn't even get fired. He just kind of wanted to leave. Like, he just wasn't a Colt. He's a Southern guy. I think he's a Texas guy.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted to just get back into like the Cal sounds like a weird place. And so I think he's wanted to get back, and then
yeah, I mean, kind of like it's Berkeley for sure, and like culturally, yeah, probably not right up there with Sonny Dykes, former Texas Tech assistant of sort of Big 12 country, Southwestern bred, sure.
Right, and so now here he is at Cal, and he's. I'm sorry, SMU, and he's and like I guess we really not that I am surprised, but I mean no one should be surprised that he's having success because he's quietly probably the type of guy that would be a great hire for a lot of Power Fives, and I think SMU should enjoy this because ultimately they beat a team that probably wasn't as good as we thought they were in TCU. They've beaten South Florida. We know they're not that good. Tulsa, they almost lost to. I guess kind of North Texas in a dominating fashion when there is probably TCU's their best, but North Texas was their first statement win. And now they got to go. Now they've got to play Temple at Houston, at Memphis, at Navy, Tulane. Like that's the home stretch. So enjoy this SMU because you probably got another couple losses coming, but absolutely this is sort of fun to watch this crew like kind of roll up.
I think that they're 7.5 point favorites against Temple. I do think that they will beat the Houston year zeros. I think right. At Memphis is going to be tough. And then, I mean, they should beat ECU, Navy, too. I mean, this might be a 10-win team.
It might be, yeah.
Wild. All right. And then, did you only have Wisconsin? I also had Baylor and Missouri. I want to give them some love at some point, too.
Even though Missouri kind of got a little bit of, like, preseason, like will they be 9-0 hype? So they're in some ways they're on track. Baylor, yes, absolutely. I for pleasant surprise, I also had North Carolina.
Yeah,
because remember, like, we were talking about North Carolina preseason as are they going to be? You know, is this going to be like a 3-win team? Are they going to have a quarterback that can complete anything? And they found a quarterback in Sam Howell. That's what it's all about. I mean, he's won them a couple games late. They found a quarterback. They recruit a quarterback. They got him, true freshman. They went out and got him, stolen from Florida State. And now Sam Howell is one of the best true freshman quarterbacks in the country. And consequently, UNC is pretty dang competitive. So that's been a pleasant surprise.
UNC, Duke, and Virginia is the ACC coastal race right now.
Okay, so I'm going to use that as my as a jumping off point to one of my other superlatives.
Okay.
Best game of the year, and the ACC gets a lot of heat, and probably deservedly so. And I also, as I was looking for this, I realized like this has been kind of a dud of a season so far.
Right,
like, there hasn't really been that many good games, and none of these games won, but like. In the ACC, like some of the best kind of nonsensical stuff is going on. UCF Pitt was a wild game and fun. UNC Clemson obviously is sort of up there the way that played out. Pitt Duke was
nuts.
A wild one.
An inadvertent signal at the end of that game.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's probably some others in the ACC that I could have put in there, but like those were a few of them. I also had Georgia, South Carolina on there.
I still haven't heard you mention a certain contest that took place in Winston-Salem recently.
What, the Wake Louisville?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that's out there. But the winner of this race is outside the ACC, though.
Oh, okay.
And it's obvious. Do you know what it is?
It's UCLA over Washington State.
Yeah, there it is. That was awesome. Go if you're listening to this and you just kind of need something to fall asleep to some night, or maybe you don't. You need like to you're staying awake waiting for something, and you just need to kind of stay engaged, get your energy, your adrenaline up a little bit. Pop on that DVR, Washington State, UCLA. I'll get you fired up.
Do you still have it on your DVR? Is it green starred so that it's saved until until manually deleted?
Well, I'm just telling you, this YouTube TV stuff is no freaking joke. Basically, I have like on-demand college football. You click two, you in two clicks, you can have the entire season DVR'd. And I literally just go in and I, in my search bar, I just type out what game I want and pops right up. TV, phone, tablet, whatever you want. I'm a big YouTube TV guy, man.
I hear the free live read going down right now.
Yeah.
All right, so I am probably still going to land on LSU Texas. I mean, that game was awesome.
Yeah.
And Texas just kept fighting all the way to the end. Like that game there were maybe three third downs in the last maybe 2, 3, 4 minutes of that game where that place was getting loud. They were exhausted, but it was just every little bit, and they knew they just needed one stop, and then Joe Burrow would throw a 25-yard touchdown pass. And the sort of back and forth there. And then also, I guess, the big picture significance. You know, we come out of that game being like, wow, holy cow, Texas has got some good wide receivers, you know? And we come out of that game being like, wow, LSU might be a national championship contender and Joe Burrow might be the best quarterback in the country. And it is all of the bias reasons because we were there, but that game felt big. I thought it delivered. And like you mentioned, it's been a season where not all the games have delivered. So that's probably still one of my favorite games of the year.
That's a good answer. I'm with you on that one.
Do you want to go disappointment team?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Nebraska.
Okay. I'm with you there.
Yeah, I mean, not just because of the fact that they were picked to win the Big Ten West, but also there was an understanding that in order to compete for a Big Ten championship, the defense had to get better. It has just been porous against the run. Adrian Martinez, this step forward in year two under Scott Frost, hasn't quite been there. The offense has been, a little bit inconsistent at times, and I just think that in terms of where I had my expectation, that it has been a little bit of a disappointment. Not that Nebraska's season is unsalvageable, but that to this point in the year, a Nebraska team that was ranked in the top 25, I have a difficult time arguing that they are one of the 50 best teams in the country.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think they are one of the top 50 teams in the country right now. They're right at about six. What is it? There's 130 teams. What is that? 65. They're 65th. They are right there. Average as grits. And
man, is that just like your old like Kentucky family just coming through right there?
I don't know. I don't know. That gets floated around here in the Southeast a good bit. So that one's pretty standard. But my thing with them isn't even the defense. It is the offense. Like if they were at this point in the season 4-3 like they are, I could rock with that. But I wanted it to be a 4-3 with an identity, like an identity of we're going to score points. Like I wanted at this point, Nebraska as a program should be like, you know, coming out to the beach in a sleeveless shirt, kind of, hey, I may not be very smart, but I got big biceps kind of guy. You know, like, I know what I am. Like, I can do this well. This is UCF in the Midwest kind of deal. And it's just not that. Like, the offense to me is supposed to be clicking by now. And then the defense, I was okay if that was going to come along a little slower. But they're both sort of taking their turns being inconsistent and not really hitting it on all cylinders. And they've got flashes. You know, Wandale Robinson, their true freshman, all-purpose back, has been good and exciting. But I don't think Adrian Martinez has looked like he's sort of taken some big leap forward we expected him to.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's all part of it.
Let's see.
My team was, and this one is, to me, is like obvious. This was the big one for me. biggest disappointment by far to me is UCLA.
Oh.
Like UCLA.
Good call. They're 1-5. Like this. Yes. Yes. Good call.
We spent because, hey, week one, we got like 7 months to talk about week one. And week one was UCLA Cincinnati. And I had to give people my prediction for UCLA Cincinnati for, it felt like, 2 months. And it was always about, well, year two, you know what? UCLA may not be recruiting that well, but they sure are getting the right guys and they sure are developing them. And they're, you know, behind the scenes, I think things have really taken place there in that program. And they come out there and they just look like just zeros. And that wasn't even a fluke. They've kind of looked like a zero every week. And so UCLA, for a team and for a coach with the reputation that he has, for them to just take zero step forward, in fact, almost looks like they're taking a step back. Like, that's been a huge disappointment.
The other ones that I had for the purposes of conversation, they aren't even that bad. I don't know if, except for Northwestern. Northwestern's a disappointment. It's not that I have sky high expectations for Northwestern, but that team is especially offensively. I guess I could zero in on the Northwestern offense because it might be one of the least effective offenses in all of the Power Five. I also put Syracuse, Stanford, Washington State, and Mississippi State on my cutting room floor. A lot of disappointment.
I would say, like, I bet you among those teams, like, fans in Starkville, I would imagine, are surprisingly right now probably even more frustrated than fans in Oxford. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and that's probably a tough pill to swallow because they just came in with higher expectations. Joe Moorhead came in with a better deck of cards than Matt Luke, and I don't, you know, after all those first round draft picks left, they're not really looking like he's the answer they thought they were. Maybe they get it rolling, but I think Mississippi State could definitely fit in that.
Coming up on the other side, some coaches that we expect to catch some buzz during the coaching carousel and some players that have impressed us so far in the 2019 season. More midseason superlatives next.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Are you going to do coaches or players?
Let's keep rolling with, let's do coaches.
Okay. I think there are a ton of really, really good defensive coordinators in this coaching cycle. And I think that the offensive coordinator pool is a little bit smaller. And I'm fascinated to see what schools decide to do, because whether you're talking about a Jim Leonard, a Jeff Hafley, an Alex Grinch, like there are Brent Pry, I guess you could also add to that group. There are some really, really good defensive coordinators that are probably good candidates. Traditionally, you know, you go around, you look for the best coordinators in the country, especially at big time Power Five schools. Are they ready for the opportunity? And I tell you what, I don't know if schools are going to make the choice to go and hire the
the DCs out there. I don't imagine Joe Brady gets plucked. And I guess I'm just sort of sitting here looking at Chip Long and kind of feeling like I'm at a loss for seeing who exactly is going to be the next assistant hired.
Yeah, well, next assistant hired. Well, how about here's one. How about Rich Rodriguez?
Oh.
But I don't know. I mean, he's got a few off-field stuff, you know, last job that might be a problem there. But I do agree that – so all the offensive coordinators, it feels like, are head coaches. Like, they're the guys that have gotten hired to be head coaches already.
Or it's a reach. Like, if we have to get all the way to Marcus Arroyo, then that's a reach if we're talking about Power 5 jobs.
Right. I agree. But I do think there's some, you know, Alex Grinch is absolutely sort of making that statement this year now that he's going to be a appealing candidate. Jimmy Lake isn't surging this year necessarily, so I didn't really like write him down as a guy to talk to because I don't know that he's a story of the early season this year. But I think Jimmy Lake, the defensive coordinator at Washington, is still probably at the top of the list of hireable coordinators right now. In terms of coordinators poised to get that head job, you know what? Brent Pry is a pretty good one.
And that's the Penn State defensive coordinator. Barton just did a good job of pulling out the school so that we can make sure that we identify that one. That is Penn State defensive coordinator Brent Pry.
Yeah, because Pry is, you know, he's coached because, you know, he's got a good personality. He's recruited well. He's coached at Vanderbilt. He's coached at Louisiana Monroe. He's coached at Georgia Southern, I believe. He's like a chameleon personality-wise that can fit in a lot of different geographical areas. He's from Pennsylvania, I think, but he's got a very Southern vibe to him. And so if they keep on playing well, I think that's probably, if you're talking about new names that are going to emerge as a strong candidate for a head job this year, based on what's going on, I think Brent Pry is probably a pretty good candidate.
Did you have any others on your list for assistant most likely to be hired?
No. And part of it is because it just feels like, just doesn't feel like this is that year. Like, you know, even we talked about Mike Elko potentially for Rutgers, and that makes a ton of sense. But I just don't know that Rutgers is going to go coordinator route this year. For the jobs that are going to be open, I still think Jimmy Lake's probably the one seed to me as far as the coordinator. And even like, you know, Jeff Hafley at Ohio State, the co-DC that popped up, I feel like too early in the national consciousness to sort of get that job this year. You know, like Clark Lee, if Vanderbilt comes open this year, Clark Lee played at Vanderbilt and would be a great fit there. But is Vanderbilt comfortable going with someone like that who's in his second year as a D coordinator? I think there's just a couple, like for the jobs that would fit, it feels like there's a couple guys, or just like the situations may not align to where we see that happen. But I do think there's still some really good candidates this year. But I think we got to just sort of see how the dominoes fall to see if they make sense.
Hafley is a New Jersey native, though. Would Rutgers want to go right back to hiring Ohio State's defensive coordinator?
Right, exactly. And he probably would be a great fit and a great hire, but they probably wouldn't be ready for that.
Yeah.
They just wouldn't. They wouldn't do it, I don't think. That's exactly kind of what I'm getting at.
So what about coaches to be fired?
The hottest seat is probably Lovie Smith.
Agree.
Would you agree with that?
Yep.
I just don't know how you defend it at this point. I don't know how you spin this as things are heading in the right direction. Things will get better. Bear with us. I mean, if it ain't happening by now, I don't think it's going to happen. The other one, he's gone to a couple bowls. but as a Nashville native that's seen it up close, it's a little bit hard to get optimistic about the future of Vanderbilt under Derek Mason, particularly after the way they just laid a total egg against UNLV.
A UNLV team that has its own like head coach on the hot seat.
Yeah, UNLV team that Tony Sanchez is supposed to get fired because he can't win in the Mountain West. And they've been giving up like 44 points a game to group of five teams, and Vandy gets 10 at home. That's just bad. It's really bad.
The names that I had on my list, which is like on the not more likely than Lovie Smith. Lovie Smith to me is a little bit of a tier on its own when we talk about Power Five and potential job openings. There is a second.
And by the way, we at some point, you know, there needs to be an autopsy where we dig in and see why Lovie Smith doesn't work, but Herm Edwards did. You know what I mean? Like why? Like the NFL model doesn't. It's not a. It won't not work, and it won't. It's not a definite yes or a definite no. It's about the personality. It's about the fit. And Lovie Smith, for whatever reason, I mean, I'm sure that guy knows his football, but maybe it's just the personality. You got to have a little more energy on the recruiting trail, what have you. But that for that to be as dramatically wrong as Herm Edwards is dramatically right is kind of interesting to me.
I do think it's personality. I think that
So let's think about it. Like, cause if so, and we actually had a comment question about this at some point. But the NFL personalities that have worked have been Herm Edwards, Pete Carroll. Is there another one out there on the top of your head?
Are you going to say?
Like it was Jim Harbaugh count, I guess.
Yeah. Probably Jim not. Harbaugh counts.
Because he was Stanford first, though.
Oh, okay. Good call.
But I guess my point is those two, at least, there's probably others we're missing, were very high energy.
Mm-hmm.
And Lovie doesn't seem as high energy.
That's, I mean, in the same way that, all right, so I'm going to use this word, but I don't necessarily mean it all the way with a negative connotation, but I think it sort of fits, but the cheesy stuff worked with Pete Carroll at USC. The lean on me, the like, let's do all these, group building, boundary breaking, icebreakers, like all that kind of stuff. He was able to get it to work and sort of refine it at USC. And I think that, you know, like Herm Edwards has not stopped being a motivational speaker. Leading the youths, you know, like he has been sort of in that position. And I think one of the institutional things that I want to investigate is a comment that I heard him make earlier this season in an interview. And Barton, you can probably help me with this, but he said that one of the ways that they're using a professional model within the team, it's with the scheduling and the meetings and sort of the way everything is set up. But the other thing is with the recruiting, with profiles, positional profiles, looking for certain heights and weights for certain, like it almost becomes a little bit scientific. Now, I don't know if we would see the results from that right away, but I think that it's fascinating to continue to watch as he builds up that Arizona State program, as that group, you know, is really, really young right now as they continue to mature. It is going to be something that I think could give more NFL coaches opportunities in college.
Well, but it at the same time, like as I would, like if Jeff Fisher wants to push himself for the USC gig or Jack Del Rio or one of these types, like that's, I'd be a little hesitant. Those guys feel a little Lovie Smith-ish. You know,
they don't feel like the high energy lead the youths kind of role.
Right. Yeah.
You got to be a little bit of a,
you got to be a little bit of a youth group leader, a little bit of a motivational speaker.
That's right.
Like you just, you need to have that little extra bit to you.
Nah. Yeah. But you were, I interrupted you. You were going on, there's a couple others you were bringing up from a hot seat perspective.
Oh, so Chad Morris at Arkansas.
See, I don't think, because they played well the last couple weeks. It is still year two, and it's a system change, a philosophical change that they're going through offensively. And that's what I think he is. I'd be shocked if Arkansas seriously made it like a serious push to get rid of him.
Okay. And then the other one that I'm saying sort of is sitting at a turning point here at the midseason is Steve Adazio.
I'm with you there.
This could go two ways, you know. And Anthony Brown, their starting quarterback, is going to be out for a little bit. I think that it's not that one game or a certain win count is going to make or break this, but it certainly feels like there's some rustling behind the scenes in the kind of sense that, you know, the agent world and the search firm world is starting to put together its list should Boston College become open.
Yeah. I talked to someone in the industry, so to speak, recently that, you know, that one's definitely on the radar. And I mean, look, ironically, I think that he is done a really good job, and that is a really challenging place to win. And he had, like, can you imagine there's a lot of people there? Look, I'm not saying there's no one out there that could come in and make Boston College a 10-2 team perennially, but I would imagine there's very few people that can take Boston College and improve on what Steve Adazio has done, because he's made them competitive every year. Like, you know, you're in for a dogfight when you play Boston College, and that's sort of a 7-win ceiling, and he hasn't been able to brush through that. But they've also had some pretty good 7-win teams, and I know that's a bad place to be in a lot of ways for fans. Either to be really good or you're really terrible. If you're right in the middle, like, people start getting bored with it. But I think Steve Adazio has actually done a pretty good job there.
I think he has done a great job there, but 10 years can run their course. And I think that when you don't have that 10-win season, it makes it much easier when it looks like things are starting to slide back and fall out a little bit. It makes it easier to make the decision to move on, because you don't have the promise that there is another 10-win season in the future if you haven't seen it. And so if the voices, or if the coaching, you know, voices start to wear a little bit, you start to just sort of run its course, a little bit of hit the reset button, the refresh button. Thanks, Steve. This was great. I mean, truthfully, this was just sort of what I experienced locally. That mutual parting of ways, right? Where it's like, Larry, I don't think that they're listening to you anymore. I think that this has run its course. We appreciate it. You got us to an ACC championship game. You guided us through an NCAA scandal. I think that we're gonna take it back to the MAC. So see ya.
Yeah.
I don't know where to go with that, but
here's one. Coaches shouldn't get too comfortable, meaning, you know, like, if you've got a pest control treatment that comes, you know, biannually, or if you're
biannually, you know, I live in the woods, we get quarterly sun.
if you plan on aerating your yard this spring or something, maybe like just put a hold on that, because you're probably going to need to start, you know, pricing out some moving trucks. Luke Fickell at Cincinnati is, I think, the group of five coach right now that is emerging as the hottest. He's the pretty girl at the dance right now.
I know.
Because it was, you know, it's been, you know, and Mike Norvell is still there. And, you know, there's there's several good group of five candidates. I mean, Jason Candle at Toledo is still one of those guys. And, you know, I mean, we talked about Sonny Dykes. Like, there's a lot going on, but I think Luke Fickell is sort of that consensus, unanimous, everybody wants him sort of dude. And especially given the kind of jobs that could come open, like say, I don't know what, you know, if James Franklin goes to USC, I mean, Luke Fickell would probably be a candidate for Penn State. He'd be a candidate for Michigan State if D'Antonio retires.
What's up with that? Gosh, I cannot believe I didn't mention that earlier. There is growing conversation that the D'Antonio era might come to an end in the near future.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of it's got to be just sort of the, I mean, he's getting, you know, so often, a lot of times we see these coaches that they don't want to fire their buddies and they want to be loyal, and AD administration goes to them and says, you got to do something here. And they say, you know what, maybe it's just time. And I'm not saying that's happening at Michigan State. I can't imagine that there's a whole lot of people in that administration that can put any kind of heat on D'Antonio that he doesn't want to feel. But you know, he's catching a little flack for the shuffling of musical chairs in the coaching room, where he just basically reassigned everyone to new positions instead of firing anybody. And it's not panning out so far this year. He's gotten some, there's been some nasty off the field stuff that he's had to address and deal with that I'm sure has worn on him. So I don't know. It just feels like it might be getting a little bit tired there for him.
Bruce Feldman, for The Athletic, friend of the program, there's some uncertainty about how much longer Mark D'Antonio might be leading the MSU program. If that job opens up, I could see MSU looking closely at Fickell.
When did he tweet that?
It is in an article that he wrote on The Athletic.
Oh, I got you. So, I mean, you know, that would be a cultural fit. That would be that'd be interesting.
Player that is impressed.
Player that is impressed. What do you got?
I got Jamar Chase and Sam Howell.
Yep. This would fit there. Like I put a category. A player that casual fans might not know, but they should know. And I bet a lot of our listeners probably know this dude, and he was on our All-American team, but Evan Weaver at Cal. Like, if you watch a Cal game, Evan Weaver makes literally every tackle.
No, he does. Like, yeah. He's like, there. He is there. At the ball at the end of every play.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every play. It's crazy. And I'm sure they're doing a lot of stuff to allow him to be that guy, because he is such a sure tackler. And, you know, I'm sure they scheme things towards him. But, I mean, that's wild how many he's involved around the football. And he's just sort of, you know, he never seems like he's tired. He never seems beat up. He doesn't even like really have any scars or bandages or anything. He's just kind of running around there. Looks like he just trotted out there for the first snap every play.
My sophomore year of high school, one of my close buddies who played on the basketball team was like 6'3". He never played football in his life. In the middle of the season, the JV coach had an opening at defensive end. They asked him to play, and he was just such a natural athlete that he was on varsity by the playoffs. And it was just because it's like, I don't know, you got good instincts, quickness, and he was like, I imagine Evan Weaver, even though he wears gloves, I imagine that he's out there like with no gloves on. You know, like he just got plucked off the side and got pulled up to varsity. He's like, all right, cool. We're playing football now. Chase, what? The ball? Let's go.
Right. Yeah. He's also wearing number 89.
Right.
You know, like just a totally random inside linebacker number. And
he does put in a ton of film study. Like I know for sure he puts in a ton of film study trying to make like give himself as many advantages as possible. So it's not all just magic. There is some hard work put in there, but you're right. It's absolutely nuts the way that he seems to be everywhere at once.
Yeah.
My player that is disappointed is cousin Shea Patterson.
Man, Shea's just kind of been a disappointing career for Shea at this point.
Yep.
I feel for him. It's probably frustrating for him. Had a lot of different coaches, a lot of different coordinators. But it's not really working. And he's good. He's fine. He's better than most quarterbacks. Harbaugh had a comment in his press conference this week or one of his media availability sessions. And the question was something to the effect of like, how do you feel about Shea's performance? Or no, I think the question was like, what are you encouraged by in this year's offense or something like that? And it's a really interesting question to hear him answer because you can see him trying to be positive and try to resist saying anything that can be spun. And hey, look, to be honest, the offense hadn't been that good. And so it takes some mental discipline to like direct, you know, an extended answer towards positives in that offense. And as he started sort of veering towards the quarterback position, one of the lines he used was, Shea Patterson, we're happy with the plays he's making. He's making good decisions, knows when to run, knows when to pass. And he said this, I thought it was interesting. He said, he's been best quarterback on the field every game he played. And I don't know, I hadn't looked back and looked at it, but I mean, I guess he's the – I mean, I don't
– Low bar? You're saying it's a really low bar.
He didn't have a better game than Jack Cohn, but I guess he's – I mean, I guess most people would take Shea Patterson over Jack Cohn, I guess. But that's – I mean, if you're looking for a way to spin it, I mean, yeah, I guess he's been the better quarterback of the two on the field that on the games that they played, I guess.
Better than Nate Stanley? And in that game, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't know. That's a good question. Would Iowa have been better off with Shea Patterson under center? Because I could see, given some of the, I mean, look, Nate Stanley wouldn't dodge in any of those pass rushers. That's as stationary as it gets right there. But I could also see Shea Patterson because he is such a. And his instinct is to extend plays and try to turn into something. I could see all those free rushers or all those pass rushers getting to the quarterback, creating more turnovers than Nate Stanley threw three interceptions. So I don't know. Couldn't have been that much worse.
I'm gonna say
maybe Shea would have been an upgrade for Nate Stanley.
I'm gonna say that Army quarterback Kelvin Hopkins Jr. was the best quarterback on the field when Michigan beat Army in overtime.
Hey.
He only had four pass attempts, but he executed the offense.
Like as we sit here, I mean, Harbaugh's statement is absolutely, it is not, you could take the other side of that.
Right.
Like, someone could have raised their hand and be like, hey, Jim, actually, Kelvin Hopkins, Nate Stanley, Jack Cohn, all had better games.
But no.
Yeah,
Michigan.
Yeah.
All right. So, do you have any other superlatives?
No. The only other one, and I kind of touched on Isaiah Simmons. I had a superlative, just the player I'm least genetically similar to.
Like, I don't know, man. You've got big arms and legs.
But Isaiah Simmons, I think, and you could make this case for probably Chase Young as the other one that's has flashed like this, but. Isaiah Simmons and the things that he does on the football field for Clemson, their linebacker safety hybrids athlete guy, it's just like different human being type stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's just I played basically his position in some way. I mean, I was more of a safety than a linebacker, but he's doing and I mean, I just to like, how fun would it be just to be able to move around like that? Like, how fun would life be to just be able to run and jump and cover ground like that?
His it's a nightmare for opposing quarterbacks when they're looking to their two receiver or they're looking over the ball and Simmons is just right there reading the quarterback.
Right. Or when he's blitzing from like 12 yards and you're like, I got plenty of time. Like, this guy's coming from like a one high safety look. And
then
and
he's
just on top of me. You know?
All right. So Michigan has at Penn State this week. They play Notre Dame at home the following week. They've got the Ohio State game at home. They've got the Michigan State game at home. Over under 1.5 wins in those four games.
Over under 1.5 wins in
Penn State, Notre Dame,
Ohio State, Michigan State.
Yeah.
Well, what you're not even going to consider the
sandwich
ultimate
spot?
The ultimate sandwich spot that one of our listeners brought up at Indiana. Over under 1.5 wins in those four games. So I would say, I mean, I think they can beat Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
And that game's at home. So I think that's the one.
I think they can beat Notre Dame. I just don't know if I would. I don't even know if my own over under, if I would take it.
That's a great question, though, because it just like, I mean, this does still feel like a team that can eke out a win.
And Notre Dame is an eke out a win kind of opponent.
Right. Very much so. But I think I would still lead under. I think I would go 1-3.
Mm.
I think they had finished the season 8-4.
It's an 8-4 team.
It's an 8-4 kind of team.
Yeah. Exactly. He is Barton Simmons. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Make sure that you subscribe to the Cover 3 podcast. And of course, if you want to add your question to our mailbag, it's growing by the day. Get it in. You give a 5-star rating. You can give a review, say something nice, or like we said, we're coachable. Offer up a suggestion. We can take coaching, but
we don't take negative coaching. We're millennials like that. But, so if you try to coach us up with a 2-star review, that's going through one ear and out the other.
Right.
But I've been excited about we have good, our listener comments have been strong and our questions have been like, there's more, some new fresh ones today that would be fun to dig into. So I think our listeners are outstanding.
Tomorrow morning, we will be back with our fresh edition of The Locks. Barton, thank you very much.
Yes,
you imaginary friends are real.
This is just so exciting.
Now, get ready for the movie event with the greatest cast you've ever imagined.
Showtime.
Ryan Reynolds, John Krasinski, Kaylee Fleming, Fiona Shaw, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Louis Gossett Jr., Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, George Clooney, Maya Rudolph, Bradley Cooper, Sebastian Maniscalco, John Stewart, Sam Rockwell, Awkwafina, Keegan-Michael Key, and Steve Carell.
I need to throw up or I need a snack. It's one of the two.
Gross.
If, rated PG, parental guidance suggested. Written and directed by John Krasinski.